Merkel Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Odyssey, Rockfin, Band.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, we certainly do appreciate your amazing and continued support. You can hear us on Fringe FM as well. We go out as a radio program on Mondays and Fridays, so check them out. Hey, speaking of Iconic, if you're interested, there's a link in the show notes that will get you 10 free days. You can try it before you buy it. Go check out what is going on over at Iconic. They've been a home to us since we started. We certainly do appreciate that. They're putting out some really great content, a lot of health and wellness components to it. There's obviously David Icke's work is there. They're doing weekly shows. They're doing documentary series. They're doing their own movies. There's a lot happening. So if you're interested, there's a link. You can try it out for free and see what you think. Our sponsor, I'll tell you, man, True Hemp Science sent over this product. It's called Bioactive Silicate. It's a little container, 2 ounce bottle like this. You buy yourself a gallon of distilled water, add this to it, shake it all up, and drink about 2 ounces in the morning, 2 ounces at night. And it will help to change the pH balance inside your body and bring it back to where it should be. I guess we, you know, our diets lead us to have higher acidic balance pH level that we really need to take care of. And what this does is it helps to alkalize your body. So some of the things that it does: kills bacteria, kills in biofilm. It kills nanobacteria, which works to clog arteries. It detoxifies the body. I've been taking mine twice a day for, I'm now in like 5 weeks or so. It's great, man. It helps to get rid of the toxins inside your body. So you might want to take a look. It's $40. It's not that bad. They have, you can go to truehempscience.com/macroaggressions. There's going to be a link in the show notes as well. It helps to helps your joints, tendons, tissue repair, flexibility, skin health, wrinkle prevention, sleep regulation, does all sorts of things. Look, it's $40. You could try it. Check it out. See what you think. Use the promo code MACRO to save yourself a couple bucks on the way out. And of course, helping to support the sponsors supports this show as well. And we certainly do appreciate that. Of course, our old standby, My Patriot Supply, man, they built a landing page for us, preparewithmacroaggressions.com. That link is in the show notes as well. You can take a look. Get yourself ready. It's coming. It's coming. And you don't even need to be Nostradamus to know it's coming. Supply chain issues, COVID insanity, monkeypox. Holy shit, monkeypox, seriously. we've got baby formula shortages. We've got breakdowns everywhere. Food processing plants blowing up. Get yourself ready. Hungry people are dangerous people, okay? You're getting advanced information about this. You're getting knowledge about things that nobody in the mainstream media is really talking about, at least not in detail. You're going to be ahead of the curve. Leverage that. Take advantage of that. These are the things that you need to do in advance, because when what we see coming is it's just a lagging indicator of where we're going to be in a couple of months. I don't want this to happen. I'm not. I wish you were just buying camping gear from my sponsor, but unfortunately, you're probably going to want to buy food. They have 4 week supplies of food. They have 3 month supplies of food. You can just get online. You can go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com right now, and you can sort this all out in 10 minutes if you want, if you're so inclined. So get rid of, get rid of your hesitancy. Be proactive, not reactive. Let's make this happen. And look, if there's someone in your life that you want to hook up in a situation like this, you can buy food and have it sent to them as well, too. It doesn't have to just be for you. Maybe you're already stocked up. Hopefully you are. God knows I've been ranting and raving about this like a lunatic, but I have to. I feel like I have to, at least, because I want to make sure that everybody is ready for what we see coming. And it's better to be a month early than a day late. So let's just think like that. Okay, speaking of this, it actually kind of ties in nicely to what we're going to cover today, because it's, I've been trying to figure out what this current 2 year crisis that we've been living through reminds me of. It's unlike anything else, right? You've got COVID and supply chain issues and all kinds of insanity. And it feels like it feels like a very unique period in world history. But it's really not, actually. Maybe the COVID thing is a variable that most people don't expect, but all of the other components of this insanity, they've been out there before. We've had supply chain issues. We've had riots. We've had mostly peaceful protests. We've never had mostly peaceful protests used to describe actual rioting, but civil disruption, intentional civil disruption. It has not been, this is not a new thing. It might be newer to America, but it's not new around the world. And I started to think about where I recognized this, and it leads me back to a late night conversation I had in a bar in Mexico with Ole Damegard till like 2:30 in the morning, where we're talking about the ins and outs of Operation Gladio. Now, I don't know, Operation Gladio is not on the nightly news, not anymore. People don't talk about it too much. If you've never heard of it before, that's understandable. It doesn't get much play. I'm going to go into a little bit of the history of what happened during Operation Gladio, what it was, why it was, who was involved in it, what they were doing, and all of this. And I want you to just, in the back of your mind, think if anything that I'm talking about with regard to Operation Gladio, which took place from like the 1950s to officially it ended in 1990, but I think, most of it was really the 60s, 70s, and early 80s. And when I'm talking about these issues that they had, just in the back of your mind, see if you can relate to anything, because I don't know if anyone else has had this epiphany, but this feels like Operation Gladio 2022. It feels like the tactics and tricks and reasoning that launched Gladio 50, 60 years ago are back, and it's being turned on us in the Western world, in America. So So what I want to do is kind of explain what this was. And then I think about halfway through this, the lights will start to go on and you'll go, I think I see where he's going with this. So let's start with what it was. So after World War II, the Nazis had, the Nazis lost the war. I think Germany lost the war. I'm not so sure the Nazis lost the war, if you know what I'm saying. I mean, I'm not going to make this Operation Paperclip, but, you know, a lot of Nazis disappeared to Bariloche and Argentina and Washington, D.C. and elsewhere, and they were used for various purposes. So after World War II, the American group thought, you know, this is sort of a... You know, the West, what Europe in general is just in shambles, right? And this is a prime opportunity for nefarious people to really rise up during that time. So what they wanted to do, what the West wanted to do, is they said, well, what if we were to, you know, they were very fearful of the Soviet Union. You know, they had met, you know, the Allies came from the West towards Berlin. The Soviets came from the East towards Berlin. They met up in Berlin. And then the Soviets sort of took care of that. America left, so to speak. I mean, we set up, you know, we went about nation building, but the overt presence, the troops and everything left and went back home. But the Soviets stayed in proximity because they took over the place. They had their troops there, and that's where, you know, it's close to their homeland, and so they stayed. And America was very concerned about that. They thought, well, what if the Soviets decide at some point they just want to keep going and take over the rest of Western Europe as well? What if they did that? What would we do if they decided to do that? So they said, well, what we should probably do, all these countries, France and Germany and all these other countries, their militaries were a wreck, but they were in the process of rebuilding them. But the military response might not always be that swift. So what if we secretly placed groups inside these countries? Sleeper cells, sort of, that could be activated. We finance them and we give them arms and everything, and we keep it really quiet, like so quiet that the government itself doesn't even know, like the government of France or the government of Italy has no idea that these sleeper cells are even there. So what if we did that and we use them as the first line of defense? If the Soviets decided to come in, we could activate these cells and it would at least buy us some time to get the rest of our troops back over there or come up with some sort of plan where we could at least cause havoc for the Soviets and stall them a little bit so that we could build up the right force and come in and then take appropriate measures against them. That was the plot. So after World War II, between 5,000 and 15,000 military operatives, or what they called stay-behind units, were left in Italy, particularly, but not limited to make sure that communism didn't take hold. Now, the reason why they sort of focused on Italy was because they knew Italy was, you know, their government was always corrupt. You know, they'd gone fascist with Mussolini. And then they'd left that when Mussolini, and then they hanged Mussolini and his girlfriend or wife or whatever. And they did all that. So they knew that the Italians could kind of go either way, depending on who got into office and who became, who was in power. They knew that the Italian people had the possibility of shifting. So if it was a Soviet, if it was a communist, they knew that it wouldn't be long before Italy was communist. And so the West, the American West, decided that that was going to be a problem. And so we needed to leave behind a bunch of agents, so to speak, military operatives, what they called them. And this was Operation Gladio. Now, Operation Gladio morphed from being about one purpose and eventually became something else. So it started off as this covert unit to prevent the Soviet Union from spreading. But the Soviet Union never spread. So these guys didn't have anything to do. Now, of course, they were doing other things, but they had the weapons, they had the training, they were secret about it, and they were, you know, they could come together in the event of an invasion. But there was no invasion. So what did they use them for? Well, they started to use them for other purposes. So the attacks, they wound up using Gladio mostly as a terrorist organization. These units were basically repurposed because since the Soviets never came to invade, they said, well, maybe we could use them to shape public opinion. Maybe we could use them to create chaos and force the government to behave a certain way. So the first attack started in early 1960s to target supporters of the Italian Socialist Party. Same thing, right? So they didn't want communism to take hold, but they also didn't want socialism to take hold. And so clandestine intelligence and operation networks were formed by NATO. So the groups, you know, you ask, who did this? Who put Operation Gladio together? Was it America? Kind of, but not entirely America. It was actually NATO, North Atlantic Treaty Organization. So NATO is a group made up of most of these Western European countries, and it was developed after World War II to be sort of a European army to fight the Soviets if they ever came back. And Gladio sprung out of that. So NATO said, we're going to be NATO, you know, wear our uniforms and call ourselves what we are. But secretly, we're also going to have these terror cells, these Operation Gladio cells sort of stashed all over in a variety of countries, but Italy being the main one. So and a gladio, the word gladio is actually a short double-edged sword used by gladiators in Rome. Ooh, a double-edged sword, you say. Interesting, because that's exactly what gladio was used for. It was a double-edged sword. It was there to be there to fight the Russians if the Russians ever came back, but it was also used to fight the Italians in Italy. So it's an interesting choice of words that they use. So it was started as a resistance force, you know, in case the Soviets came back, but I think the best way to describe it is that it transformed into a terrorist cell, a terrorist operations. Real quiet, though. Amazing how long the Italian government had no idea this was operating. I mean, decades they didn't do it. And the reasoning, what we later found out, was that they said this kind of the same thing. Like, think of Gladio, you know, the reason why you didn't know about Gladio, Italian government, is the same reason why you don't know about UFOs in the American government. Governments come and go. Politicians come and go. But this institution itself is going to stay for a long, long time. So they didn't tell the prime minister of Italy that Gladio was operating there. They didn't tell the defense secretary that Gladio was operating there. The people that were in charge, they didn't know. And the reasoning was, well, you guys are so easily like blackmailed and controlled and manipulated that we can't give you this information because it's only a matter of time before you give it to the Soviets. And then the whole point of this thing doesn't work anymore. So we're going to keep it so secret that we're not even going to tell the host country's government, because we know that all governments are fucking corrupt and they'll eventually tell the Russian government. So Gladio was interesting in that NATO knows, like, you can't trust these governments. They're all borderline fascists anyway. So you don't tell them, we're just going to do it on the down low. And if you guys ever get caught, then, you know, it's going to be like, we'll just disavow any knowledge of you and you're all kind of on your own. But they did get caught, and one guy started talking, and that's how the whole thing sort of unraveled. But that didn't happen until like 30 years later. So, you know, like I said, even though Italy gets most of the blame for Operation Gladio, it also existed in Belgium, Switzerland, Germany, Netherlands, Denmark, Norway, Spain, Portugal, Greece, Turkey, Finland,
Austria, Sweden, and so it's everywhere. And nobody knew. Like, the governments didn't know. It was a really well-kept secret. I give them points for that. So we'll rewind a little bit. So back in right after World War II, 1948, the CIA had just come into existence, and their first order of business, because they're the CIA and they're despicable, was to rig the Italian elections. And they did, so that no communist would gain power in the Italian parliament. And also, they needed to make sure that no communist would be in the Italian parliament, because if there were communists in their parliament, then they couldn't be brought into NATO. So the CIA specifically made sure that they got the election results that they wanted in Italy, because it was important that there were zero communists in there, because they were going to be brought into NATO, which is exactly what happened. So they rigged the election in 48, and then in 49, Italy was officially brought into NATO. And of course, this was, you know, the CIA, MI6, and NATO were deeply involved in false flag operations all throughout Western Europe. This was, they would infiltrate like semi-peaceful left-wing groups and would push them to commit violence in order for the government to crack down on them. And January 6th, anyone? What this would do is it would create a domestic emergency in order to ask, and then they would ask the government for more money or for more money for our military or more money for NATO. And this was, so NATO was doing the false flag terrorist operations in order to scare the shit out of the countries, so the people would demand that their government spend more money on NATO. It's evil. It's genius, but it's evil genius. So, you know, you create the domestic emergency. I feel like such a conspiracy theorist for talking about this. Yeah, except that this has been going on for at least 70 years in this context. So, again, you can go look it up. It's all there. So this was all in an effort to be granted more authoritarian powers. And this is we'll fast forward to the Italian parliament, the year 2000, turn of the millennium. It was said here, those massacres, this is in the Italian parliament, those massacres, those bombs, those military actions had been organized or promoted or supported by men inside Italian state institutions and, as has been discovered more recently, by men linked to the structures of the United States intelligence. Oops, got busted. But again, what are you going to do about it? It was decades earlier. This is the year 2000. They're talking about figuring out what was going on with all the bombings in the 70s and 80s. You're going to hold somebody accountable for this? Unlikely. And of course, it never happened. And so there was massive violence, random violence happening, especially in Italy. And I'm going to get to a list of some of the things that were happening there. But this random violence was carried out and was always blamed on groups that were advocating for progressive or revolutionary change. You know, they would just do it. It's false flags. You should do it and then pin it on your enemies, right? And, you know, so since the Soviets never showed up to be the bad guys like we thought, or like NATO thought they would eventually, then NATO and CIA and the CIA had to play the role of the bad guys and start attacking the Italy instead to justify, you know, to justify this, to justify their existence, really. So what were they doing? Well, it was just bombings, car bombs, buildings blowing up, shootings of innocent civilians, propaganda for decades. There's massive propaganda, murders of women and children, kidnappings, assassinations. The Italian prime minister was assassinated. All his security guards were all shot. Psychological operations were run. Torture, rape. This is Western Europe in the 70s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. Okay. Death squads. Like, this is hardcore stuff. And it wasn't Islamic fundamentalist. It wasn't Russian mania, the NKVD out of the Soviet Union. It wasn't any of those people. It was NATO. It was NATO running these operations. They were the ones that were financing these groups. They were the ones that were giving them intelligence. They were the ones that were giving them weapons, bombs. They're finding like C4 explosives in the debris of these buildings that were blowing up, or these cars that were blowing up. And they'll go, this is military grade. These guys have no business having access to this. There's only like two groups in the world that have access to this. And it's not these guys. So where are they getting it? Well, they're getting it from NATO, of course. Because, as we know, you get order out of chaos. And if the chaos isn't there organically, then you bring it there yourself. Then you make it happen. And how do you make it happen? Well, there's a variety of ways you can do it, but just talking about it isn't going to work. Just trying to threaten people or scare them about a potential deadly virus isn't going to do it. If you want people to be really scared, you need to start participating in random acts of violence. It's quite one thing if you're a military man and you're on the battlefield and something blows up next to you and it kills you. You're putting yourself in a position for bad things to happen. It'll be sad. Your family will be very upset that you're gone, but you're in the military. You're in the middle of a war. However, when a random car bomb goes off in a business district of some obscure town that has no real emphasis in the war or anything like that, just a regular old town, that does something. That does something to the psychology of the people. That makes it feel like this could happen anywhere at any time. And that is part of what they described the mission of Gladio. And you have to be a hardcore psychopath to come up with this concept. It's called the strategy of tension. The strategy of tension is to make the public uncomfortable wherever they go, no matter what they're doing. That's why it's one thing to blow up a military target. It's quite another thing to blow up a movie theater with no strategic value at all, except that there is a strategic value to it. The value is to create fear. It's not that you're mad at the movie theater operator or what movie is being shown. You just want to show that it is possible that this bomb can go off in any theater around this country, anywhere you are. And when people have that in the back of their heads, or maybe even in the front of their minds, it changes their behavior. It makes them very fearful. You know, like COVID is coming around the corner and it's going to get you. I'm so scared. Take away all my freedoms. Save me, daddy government. Problem, reaction, solution. You got it. So let's talk about some of the attacks that happened during Operation Gladio, part of the strategy of tension. Put yourself in their shoes in Italy and see how you would feel if these things happened. See how you would how it would impact the decisions you make about where you're going to go on a Tuesday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. 1969, Piazza Fontana bombing, 17 people killed. 1972, Petano bombing, 3 Italian officers killed, car bomb. Someone called in, there's a broke down car over there. Can you guys go check it out? We don't know what it's doing there. The 3 cops go lift up the hood. sets the bomb off, boom, blows them to smithereens. 1978, kidnapping and assassination of Italian Prime Minister Aldo Moro and five of his staff. 1980, Oktoberfest bombing in Munich, 13 killed, 211 injured. Like I said, not limited to Italy. This was happening all over the place. 1980, Bologna railway station, 85 killed. Blowing up trains, are you? Where have I heard that before? 7-7. Oh, yeah. Hey, wasn't Peter Power running a simulation on the morning of 7-7 in the same underground stations in London where the bombs just magically happened to go off? I mean, I have him on radio. Radio 1, BBC 1, and BBC 2. On two separate interviews that are recorded, and you can find that. Talking about how they were running simulations of trains exploding on the morning of July 7th, 2005. And then what do you know? Those same trains in those exact same stations where they just happened to be running simulations wound up blowing up exactly like the simulation. 1980, Bologna railway station, 85 killed. I think you're going to understand where I'm going with this in a minute when I mention this next one. 1985, Brabant massacres in Belgium. 28 killed, 40 injured. Supermarket shootings. We have a problem. We are in the middle of America's Operation Gladio, and they're following the same script down to the locations. Here's a quote from that 85 massacre. All we ask is that your group, with cover from the gendarmerie, with cover from security, carry out a job. Target the supermarkets. They're running the same script. Was the Buffalo, New York supermarket shooting and the Boulder, Colorado supermarket shooting part of Operation Gladio 2022? Vincenzo Vinciguerra, ooh, Jack Marius Tech Theratrix, member of the neo-Nazi paramilitary group Ordine Nuovo, which translates to New Order, not the British New Wave band from the 80s, I assure you. Testimony while on trial for bombing said the following. This is a guy who is sitting in an Italian courtroom explaining how Gladio went down, because he would know. This is what he said, quote, you had to attack civilians, the people, women, children, innocent people, unknown people, far removed from any political game. The reason was quite simple. They were supposed to force these people, the Italian public, to turn to the state to ask for greater security. This was precisely the role of the right in Italy. It placed itself at the service of the state, which created a strategy aptly called the strategy of tension, insofar as they had to get ordinary people to accept that at any moment over a period of 30 years, a state of emergency could be declared. So people would willingly trade part of their freedom for the security of being able to walk the streets, go on trains, or enter a bank. Well, he may be a psychopathic bomber, but he wasn't lying there. So, why do they want a state of emergency? Well, it makes it a lot easier to manage the population. We've just lived through COVID. And I know I'm not even sure we can put that in the past tense, but we saw what happened during a state of emergency. I mean, think of what it does to just the human psyche in a state of emergency. Turns off the critical thought component of the brain. It puts you into a fight or flight mentality. You make short-term decisions, usually not the best ones, but look, given the fact that you're in a state of emergency, you are in an emergency, tomorrow doesn't matter. You might not get to tomorrow unless you take care of today, this emergency that is looking you right in the face. So you sacrifice long-term planning. In order to be able to get yourself out of that current situation right now, you make short-term decisions. They want a state of emergency because it's easier to control people that are in fear. Just like this guy said, looking to the state, trading in, doing the benefit, trading in security, trading in liberty for security and getting neither. They want a state of emergency because then they can put sanctions on groups that they don't like, on media that's saying, telling the truth. They want restrictions placed on certain businesses, certain people, your ability to freely travel. Look, it's a state of emergency, right? They can just always hide behind that shield and say, it's for your safety. That's what the Nazis used to say. It's for your safety. Oh, okay. They do it because when you're in a state of emergency, you can roll out new laws. They don't have to go through all the legal rigmarole of getting approved and whatever. You can make it one-sided. You can, in America, you can just bypass all of the, you know, all the pesky debating and facts and hearing both sides. No. You can rule by executive order if you want to. In a state of emergency, you have no rights. You have fewer rights, I should say. It's the removal of civil liberties. We've watched this happen. It creates a state of fear. A state of emergency comes about because of a state of fear. But once you are living under a state of emergency, it's like a feedback loop. It accelerates and magnifies that fear because of the state of emergency. Now everything, it's inescapable. Conditions the people to be compliant and obedient. They don't talk back. We're in an emergency. The general public then internalizes that and they become the enforcement arm. This is the reason why you see the people, we've talked about this a million times, calling the police on their neighbors over Thanksgiving because they saw too many cars in the driveway. It's not the police driving by recognizing that. It's the state of emergency that broke your neighbor's brain. And now they just see, you know, you're having a COVID super spreader event. And next thing you know, they're on the phone with the police, with the authorities, the Gestapo, in this case, whatever. So you want to know what I think? I think the FBI is running Gladio inside America right now.
I think the FBI is running. I don't think it's not NATO necessarily. Could be. But the FBI has a long track record of being the largest domestic terrorist organization in America. If you think that, if that's the first time you're hearing that, you may think I sound insane. But let me break down just a short list of the terrorist events that the FBI has been deeply involved in. Let's start with, it's like, where do we even start? Okay, well, we'll go back to 1992. And I'm not, like I said, this is not the full list. We could do another show on the full list of the FBI being the largest domestic terrorist organization in America. But let's start in 1992 with Ruby Ridge. Okay, FBI, deeply involved in that. Let's go 1 year after that, Waco. ATF was involved in that as well, but the FBI was 100% involved in that. But not quite as involved as they were in the 1993 World Trade Center bombings, where they literally parked the van with the explosives and set those guys up to try and take down the World Trade Center. That was the FBI doing that. Those guys were like, they said that the vans, they said it was dummy, you know, it was dummy, it wasn't real bombs or anything. They swapped them out. You got the real bombs. Never work with the FBI. They will double cross you. What about the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing? We haven't done a deep dive on this. I will at some point. They said, well, wait a second. How could the FBI be involved? And then they blew up the FBI, the Murrow Federal Building where the FBI was. No, they couldn't have been involved in that. Well, why don't you find the news coverage from that day that seems to have been scrubbed from the internet, but I've seen multiple reports on television of them saying multiple bombs were found in the building. Wait a second. I thought Tim McVeigh and his Ryder truck, and I thought they did it. That story didn't add up at all. 2017 Las Vegas shooting. Special Agent Rouse, as soon as he got involved, everything went shut up. FBI covered that up. The FBI, if they're not directly involved in financing the bombers, radicalizing them, finding some low IQ moron that doesn't know his ass from a hole in the ground, and whipping him up into a frenzy, providing them with schematics for how to make bombs, providing them with the materials to make them, hell, providing them the fucking bombs themselves. If they're not doing all those things, then they're at least the cover-up squad that comes in at the end. As soon as Rouse showed up on the scene, everything changed in Vegas. And that's why I remember when I saw him, I go, well, the cover-up team's here. Get ready for it. Now you're not going to get anything. The truth is that the FBI is America's Gestapo. Okay, if we want to put this in Italian terms, Operation Gladio terms, the FBI is America's Gestapo. It's America's secret police. What if we look into some recent events? We don't have to go back 30 years to Ruby Ridge. Why don't we talk about the Gretchen Whitmer fake kidnapping in Michigan, where they rounded up all those guys, talked about how they were part of some right-wing domestic terror. Oh, really? You're plotting kidnappings and then blaming it on political opponents. I'm sorry. Straight out of Gladio. Straight out of it. Brought all those guys up on and took them to trial, dismissed the half of them were found not guilty. The other guys, they just flat out dismissed the case.
they were all FBI informants. They were all working with the FBI. It's that Spider-Man meme where there's like seven Spider-Mans and they're all pointing at each other. And it's like FBI informant, FBI informant, some dipshit that didn't understand what was going on. But they're all FBI informants except for one guy. But in this case, even he was an FBI informant. They were all working for the feds. So when you can't organically get the terrorist event that you desperately need in order to sway public opinion or enact some bullshit legislation, then you make it happen. And who do they bring in? They bring in the FBI. And why did they do it? Because it works so well with Operation Gladio. The FBI tried to lure Omar Mateen, remember him, the Pulse nightclub shooter in Orlando? Yeah, they went tried to lure him into some kind of attack. I mean, he had intelligence ties anyway, but the FBI had their fingerprints all over that guy. They were trying to get him to do other stuff before that. They tried to lure Peyton Pruitt into joining ISIS. This kid had a 51 IQ. They should have put him in Congress with that IQ. One more recent that you probably don't know the name of, but you maybe have heard the story. Jerry Drake Varnell, 23. He's the schizophrenic. Always, you know, there's always something wrong with these guys. Their low IQ is sort of a common thread here. You've got to be able to manipulate these people. They were trying to talk him into joining part of a right-wing terror group to blow up buildings, but his parents found out. Does this ring a bell? This was 2019. His parents found out and they were like, what the fuck is going on? The FBI is trying to radicalize my schizophrenic son into blowing up buildings. He lives at home. He can't organize, you know, dinner plans, let alone blowing up buildings. He sits in his room and plays video games all day long. He's mentally ill. He's not right. FBI was actively trying to recruit this kid. They paid him. They were grooming him to become a domestic terrorist. Till his parents found out, and they're like, he's like, "Mommy, Daddy, can I go play with the FBI?" They're like, "No, son, you can't, because you will wind up in a prison cell for the rest of your life, just like a bunch of these guys." David Williams, a felon, paid by the FBI to pretend to be part of a Muslim terror plot to blow up synagogues and shoot down jets with missiles. Again. Here's a little bit of advice. If you're on Reddit, well, first of all, if you're on Reddit, get off. But if you're on Reddit and some friend of yours starts talking to you about, hey, this world's a really dangerous and shitty place, you know, the best thing would be if we could just take out some of these guys. Know what I mean? That's called a glowy. That's what you call a federal agent that is online pretending to be a radical something or other. They're called glowies. The reason why they're called that is because they glow all over the place. You can see them a mile away. Problem, reaction, solution. At the core of this. Think about the Operation Gladio tactics in relation to what we're experiencing right now with random shootings. Why are these shootings happening? They're picking specific places, specific times. Is it as random as it appears to be? I mean, sure. Look, let's be as intellectually honest about this as possible. Is it possible that somebody could be mentally ill, grab a gun, go and shoot up a grocery store, kill a bunch of people, and that not be tied to the intelligence agencies? Is that possible? The answer is yes, it is possible that could be an organic thing that happens. that people see it on television, or maybe it's a copycat type of thing, or maybe they want to be famous, or maybe they're going to kill themselves anyway. Maybe somebody at the grocery store called them a dummy the last time he was there, and he's plotting his revenge. Of course, all those things could happen. That's the reason why they do happen, because at their core, it is possible for these things to be organic. The problem is, most of the time, they're not. And you don't really understand whether they are or aren't until you get a little bit of distance away from it, a little bit of time away from it. And then you look back on it. And one of the best things that gives it away, whether the fact that it was not a real event. When I say not real, I mean the event is real, the shootings are real, the people dying are real, but I mean the person was manipulated into carrying this out. You can, when you look back at what came in the wake of these events in the form of legislation, that's how you know it's a fake one. And that's why this Buffalo shooting has got all the fingerprints of the FBI all over it. And let me tell you why. New York Governor Kathy Hochul signed an executive order to, quote, strengthen and close loopholes in the state's gun laws, and to, quote, combat the steady rise in domestic terrorism and violent extremism, and to crack down on social media platforms that host and amplify content that promotes and broadcasts violent, lawless acts. Right on fucking schedule. She didn't even wait a week. What are the chances this legislation was drawn up months in advance, sitting in her desk drawer, just waiting to be put into action? Happened in a blue state with a captured governor. That happens a lot. Not always. From Kathy Hochul, quote, we have announced there is a package of gun laws that we're going to be proposing. We have more guns to deal with. Problem. There's a mass shooter who shot up our grocery store in Buffalo. Reaction. Do something about it. How can we allow these weapons of war in the hands of these kids that are, these people that are radicalized? Solution. We have announced there is a package of gun laws. ...180-page manifesto. Always with the manifesto. Muhammad Atta, the San Bernardino shooters, Unabomber. Unabomber's manifesto is pretty fucking based, I'll be honest with you, though. Look, the 180-page manifesto that the Buffalo shooter supposedly wrote has been plagiarized from the New Zealand shooter, who also filmed himself with a high-powered rifle going in and shooting everybody up, leaving a manifesto as well. I'm sure, just a giant coincidence. A lot of the wording was the same. 180 pages for a manifesto. You know, that's a decent size. It's a small book. They choose the location because of strict laws governing gun ownership and a large black population. That's why this happened in Buffalo. Because in this particular area, there are very strict gun laws. Requiring gun ownerships. And there's a large black population. They're saying, look, we have strict gun laws, and it still happened. We have to enact more gun laws. And in fact, she even said we're gonna close loopholes, which is what she said, strengthen and close loopholes. This also helps in the Operation Gladio world of framing the shooter as a white supremacist. Now we've got multiple agendas going on here. We have gun control. We have white supremacy. We have domestic terrorism. We have radicalized online on social media. What next? He was anti-vax? Actually, he was pro-vax, but whatever. I guess they didn't want to get greedy and try and cram five agendas in when they're like, whoa. All right, let's we gotta slow down here. Hochul signing another executive order to, quote, fight the troubling surge in domestic terrorism and violent extremism frequently inspired by, planned on, and posted about on social media platforms and internet forums. They're coming for you, Reddit, you freaks. Now, keep in mind, this is a mere days after the shooting happened. Kathy Hochul launching, quote, threat assessment management program that will include multidisciplinary teams throughout New York to identify and assess domestic terrorism threats. Just like Joe Biden wanted. What did he say? What did Biden say? That the biggest threat was domestic terrorism? You know, like those mothers that went to the school board meeting and said that they didn't like what was going on in their school, and then they were labeled domestic terrorists, and then the Fed showed up at their houses? Again, days earlier, you have the shooting, and then all of a sudden, the threat assessment management program is rolling out? Come on. Hochul requested New York State Attorney General Letitia James investigate the social media platforms that, quote, promote and elevate hate speech. Here we go again with hate speech. A vague term. Such as Twitch, 4chan, 8chan, and Discord. I'm a little surprised Discord's on the list. Not because I have any sort of love for Discord. They nuked my macroaggressions channel. I'm just surprised because I thought Microsoft was trying to buy them. Maybe they didn't coordinate this. Maybe Kathy Hochul and Letitia James didn't speak to Bill Gates before they put this out. I don't know. We'll see. But just all these coincidences, you know, like this guy goes and shoots up a supermarket in New York, and then Kathy Hochul, who took over for Cuomo, as you recall, and she's every bit as psychotic as he was. She's got like the perfect excuse to enact all her domestic terrorism programs, all of her social media fighting programs, all of her gun restriction programs. I'd say that Kathy Hochul puts the GLAD in Gladio. In order to get legislation passed, they must have a high enough body count. In order to rile up the public and justify the removal of rights and restrictions. Not enough dead people, you'll never pull it off. But if you get a big enough body count, they'll let you do just about whatever you want. And the FBI is involved in this. We've got the 2022 New York subway shooter, false flag, where, I mean, it's got false flag written all over it to me. If you watch the videos, Watch some of the videos of that, of the people that are getting on and off the train that are doing unusual things, hanging around, spraying fake blood all over the place. I don't understand what's going on there. I've seen that before. I saw that at the Boston bombing. You know, another fake bombing that justified locking down a portion of Massachusetts. Dress rehearsal. Tsarnaev brothers had massive contact with the FBI as well. So anyway, I mean, look, again, the FBI is involved in this. They're always involved in this. They're the ones that are doing it. I hate to break it. If you've got some sort of, I don't know, some sort of vision of the FBI from what you've seen on television as the good guys, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to break it to you. They're just not. But the black radical subway shooter was anti-white and a black extremist. Again, strategy of tension. You get on a subway, you never know. Today's the day. You get on a subway in Brooklyn and some dude's just down there mowing people down. Or setting off bombs or whatever. It doesn't have to happen every single day. The people that live there, that live through that, they just know in the back of their mind, it could happen. And what are you doing to keep me safe? What are you doing, Kathy Hochul, to keep me safe? Well, I just enacted all of these brand new laws to flag social media accounts and have the feds show up at people's doors and bust them down if they post something derogatory online. 2021, Waukesha, Christmas parade. The driver, anti-Trump, anti-white, mows down a bunch of people. Tension. 2020, January 6th. Major, major FBI involvement in that. Massive. There are feds everywhere. 2020, BLM, mostly peaceful protests. In multiple cities, almost like it was coordinated. Woke district attorney weirdos, allowing violent offenders out, refusing to prosecute crime, creating chaos in the city, refusing to prosecute anybody that steals anything under $950. And when people do get caught, letting them out on no cash bail, just up and clearing out 40% of the prison because COVID, including a guy that was on a life sentence with no parole for murdering people. Chess about and just let him out. 2020. You tell me, like, what are you seeing? It fits the pattern to me. Antifa riots, cops do nothing. Defund the police, sure was organized and well-financed. Southern border left wide open. Food processing plants catching fire. Last count, I'm at 32, just in America. Chicken cullings, COVID lockdowns, forced vaccinations, price inflation, 300 genders, tranny story time, $7 gasoline, shortages and supply chain disruptions, fentanyl deaths, no baby formula, Ministry of Truth, RIP. This is psychological warfare against the people in order to create the conditions in which people will voluntarily give up their rights in order for them to receive some form of security from the state. The problem is, the state is the one who's involved in the terrorism. If you like this episode, you can share it with your friends and family. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggressions. You can go to the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. I'll talk to you all later.